Churches in the United States are barred from endorsing political candidates or contributing to campaigns. This part of our tax code is known as the Johnson Amendment. It includes all nonprofit tax-exempt organizations, but President Trump and others say the rule runs contrary to free speech. The president has pledged to repeal it, and that's just what House Republicans are trying to do as part of the federal tax overhaul being negotiated right now. Matthew Bodie looked at the political content of sermons following the 2016 presidential election. He took a national cross-section with a big piece coming from where he lives in Hull County, Georgia. He's an assistant professor at the University of North Georgia. Matthew, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
And here to guide us through the wonky side of tax policy is Susan Anderson. She is an accounting professor at Elon University in North Carolina. Susan, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Matthew, let me start with me. Where do we dig in on this? What did you conclude when you looked at the political content of sermons following the 2016 presidential election? I guess the first part of that is, what did you find, and then what did you conclude?
Well, I did. As you mentioned, I looked at a cross-section of the United States and battleground states and here in Georgia, and found that of the 47 sermons that I looked at, about 60%, 62% exactly, mentioned the election in some fashion. Your second question is, how did they talk about it?
Yeah.
The main takeaway that I have is that the majority of people who talked about it suggested that politics or this particular election or any candidate doesn't change what they call the mission of the church, to spread the gospel, do good work, things like that. They certainly talked about their reactions and their feelings and maybe one or two political issues, but the overall message was, you know, God's bigger than politics. That was the takeaway for me, is that they didn't seem to affect them as much as some other things.
Yeah, but Matthew, earlier this year, the president signed an executive order directing the Internal Revenue Service to actually ignore enforcing the law. And I guess I'm wondering, in this kind of political climate, what would it actually take to trigger any action from the IRS in this area? What are your thoughts on that?
I can't think it would take. It would take a whole lot.
Wouldn't it?
Pictures on Twitter of churches endorsing Roy Moore in Alabama. If a literal sign in front of the church doesn't do it, I can't imagine anything else doing. I mean, there was one pastor in my sermon who was on Trump's evangelical board who directly endorsed Trump in a sermon in his church, in his pulpit, and you know, he was doing it directly in defiance of them, and he said he was doing it, so they didn't seem to care about that. So I cannot imagine, even in any other political climate, the IRS jumping in, because they, I think, are, you know, don't want to get into what churches have to say.
Yeah, Susan, do you agree with that? What would it take? The idea is you can't be overtly political in your church activities, and who defines overtly at this point?
Well, the IRS is. I agree that in this environment, it is going to be very difficult for the IRS to jump in and censure a church for speaking politics from the pulpit. Mm. They've had their budget cut so much that they are scared of having further budget cuts.
Well, Daniel Blomberg is a legal counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. His nonprofit actually believes that tax-exempt organizations should be able to endorse candidates. Here he is speaking to WBUR.
The IRS shouldn't be able to control what pastors, priests, imams, and rabbis say to their congregations during their religious worship services as a part of their religious teaching. Period.
So, Matthew, let's lean on your research here a bit more. Do pastors want to have the freedom to say what they want, to go as far as they want in endorsing political candidates or topics? What did you find?
I would have to say no, based on the sermons that I did, because if the overall message was politics is you know, not the same thing as what the church does, they didn't seem to want to get involved more in politics. I looked at one particular, you know, guy in North Carolina who said that, you know, he gave a sermon on election day about his feelings after election, but he also talked about why he doesn't get into politics, and he says it's not the job of the pastor to unite people in politics. So I can't imagine him now endorsing a candidate And then for the churches, the 40% or so of churches that didn't talk about the election, well, they didn't seem to think it was important enough to talk about. I can't imagine them now reversing course and going more political and endorsing a candidate.
So more than 4,200 religious leaders signed an interfaith petition to keep the Johnson Amendment intact. 5,500 charitable organizations have objected to the proposed revision by signing a letter to that effect. Have a listen to this. So this is Amanda Tyler. She is the executive director of the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty, and she spoke to WBOR last week. Here's what she had to say.
You know, we at the Baptist Joint Committee, we're also a 501c3. We think that the current law strikes the right balance and that the current law is supported by most Americans.
So, Susan, why is this administration, the Trump administration, taking on this issue? Is this about base politics?
Well, there's speculation that it is. Under the proposal that's in the House bill, it is not in the Senate bill, churches and other 501c3 organizations would be able to engage in political speech if it's in the ordinary course of their events and if it doesn't cost much, if it has a small cost. There's speculation that donors are going to want to contribute more to churches that will engage in political speech. In this manner, their campaign contributions become tax deductible as charitable contributions.
Well, that's huge, isn't it? That is huge.
Yes, that is huge. And in the churches and other 501c3 organizations do not have to reveal the donors' names, which they would have to do if it was a qualified campaign organization.
Wow. Susan Anderson from Elon University and Matthew Bodie are here with us, and we're talking about the proposed repeal of the Johnson Amendment. That repeal would allow churches to openly advocate for issues and political candidates. Look, Matthew, what would this mean in terms of the increase of political spending? How would you trace the money? And donors would be able to deduct contributions. What would it all mean?
I would say it has broad implications beyond churches. I mean, I can think of campus religious groups that are also 501c3 organizations that would have the same benefits, of hiding where their money comes from and all that. There are parachurch organizations across the United States that would do the same. So it would make political money even harder to find and even harder to regulate. And then money becomes speech even more powerfully.
Susan, would you get sham churches set up solely to support issues and candidates?
Exactly. In fact, if someone sets up a church, they don't have to file an application for exempt status with the IRS. They would only be found if someone turned them in.
And Matthew, this next one, look, it's a question for you, but it's a question for everyone listening. Do we really want our churches and universities, you just mentioned universities a moment ago, to openly become venues for partisan politics openly? Some might say they are already.
Well, I wouldn't think they're not already. I would say that it would radically change the mission of churches, as the pastors presented in my study, but also the mission of any other nonprofit or universities and campus religious groups. It would make political or politics the center of what they do, that's not what I do as a professor, and I don't think that's what churches do.
And Susan, what would the separation of church and state mean in a non-Johnson Amendment world?
Well, it would definitely mix politics with 501c3 organizations. Now, I will say that proponents of the Johnson Amendment say that politics is already mixed with churches because they have this law in place that limits their free speech.
Susan, how do you want to frame this debate? You want to talk about this. You think it's important right now. It's part of the American debate. We need to have this conversation. This is language in the House bill. It's not in the Senate version of the tax bill. How do you want to frame this debate?
Well, I think it's important that people be aware of the pros and cons of the Johnson Amendment and be aware that it is on the table right now. So much about the tax bill has been written that's important, but we haven't gotten into this detail very much in our public discourse.
And Matthew, is it the appropriate place to be talking about this, a free speech issue? Should it be a part of tax legislation?
I don't agree with the framing that the IRS is trying to control what churches say. So I wouldn't frame it as a free speech First Amendment issue. I would frame it as what is the role of these organizations, yep. churches, government, politics. It seems that the churches get to define themselves already, and they define themselves as churches and non-political. So I can't imagine they're all saying, well, we want to do more or say more. They're doing what exactly they're saying they're doing.
And Susan, how realistic is it to think that the House and the Senate Republicans in both of those chambers will agree on this provision as they attempt to reconcile their bills?
I think it's very possible.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Huh. Tell me why.
Well, just the current climate in the Congress at this point. I think that church leaders, or especially evangelical leaders, have a lot of influence among the Republican leadership.
And what about you, Matthew?
Well, you know, I just watch news and read the paper like everybody else.
Yeah.
So obviously the House Republicans are listening more to the people, the white evangelical leaders who want this passed. As you mentioned, all the people against it, I can't imagine the Senate going along with it, but, you know, they do this at the last minute most times, so maybe they will. But I would hope not.
Matthew Bodie is an assistant professor of English at the University of North Carolina. His findings appear next month in the journal Sermon Studies. Susan Anderson is an accounting professor at Elon University. Thank you to both of you. Thanks for your time.